Can I start with this?
Yeah, yes. Please go ahead.
So you said that about Bill Clinton. So we're talking impeachment still. This is our podcast only edition of Dig Deep. Would not be elected. Did you say would not be elected?
Yeah, he would not be elected today.
Post Me Too
era.
I don't think we're in the post Me Too movement. I mean, how did Donald Trump then get elected?
But I don't mean post Me Too, like it's over and it's forgotten. Okay. I mean, like
in this climate,
in the awareness. And Me Too happened after Donald Trump got elected.
Right.
But and I think, you know, in that context, someone with Clinton's background is not going to make it through a primary.
Through a Democratic primary.
That's what I'm saying. I think it could happen in a Republican. Now, I get the awareness, but I don't know that it has transcended into politics, the Me Too movement, or into positions of leadership. Does that make sense?
So, if you're saying it's not ubiquitous everywhere, like we have 100% consensus about it, I totally agree. I don't think anyone running the Democratic primary today with like a credible rape allegation would garner 5 votes. It just wouldn't.
But what about Republican?
Maybe.
Well, I mean, there's a number of assault allegations against the President of the United States. Some of them you can argue, pick them apart, and maybe they're not as credible, but some of them are very credible.
Yeah.
And they have to do with his past involvement dating back years and years, his own divorce decree and things like that. And he not only did he get elected, and I'm going to just say this right now, he could get reelected. It's possible.
Well, I think if you were talking about Donald Trump is an anomaly. I mean, I don't think anyone could argue that he is like not some different thing. If you said, like, could Marco Rubio have a rape allegation and get the Republican nomination?
Probably not.
No one.
See, there's something going on in the national psyche. I don't even know what to call it. It's almost like a spell. And Trump has figured out the narcissism of our age and the fact that he never apologizes or regrets anything. Seems to be literally never regrets anything, despite its obvious problems.
Right.
It has this effect on people. Well, it must not be true then, I guess. Well, I don't know.
But could Oprah run for president today and have some like scandal that offended the sensibilities come to light and still get elected president? I think, yeah, I think she could. We are at this point in our evolution as a country where the presidency is no longer the presider. It's no longer like the lesser of three branches of government. It's literally like
the emperor.
The emperor. And in that case, the person with the most bling, with the greatest story, it is ripe for a Donald Trump, Oprah Winfrey, and I'm not trying to put those morally on the same ground,
but
I'm trying to put them on the same, like, it is made for the Kardashians to run for president.
And like I've been seeing, and Kanye West, actually he is being touted as a potential successor to Trump in the Trump circles because he's been open to the Trump message and all this. And so it's no longer about like I think the thing that's been smashed maybe at or before Clinton and thereafter are these political norms. And some of them probably deserved smashing, no doubt. But we were governed a lot in this country by norms more than we realize. Like, it's just not done. And so, you know, in the Senate.
Oh, you know, now you are triggering me.
Oh?
Yeah, no, go ahead. Well, I feel like, I mean, yes.
We're digging deep here.
I think that culturally we were a society governed by norms. And I think that there was, lines that you didn't cross, ways of decorum. Mm-hmm. There were ways of dealing with each other. And I feel like the entire progressive project, post-Wilson, but particularly post-New Deal and the modern incarnation of the 1960s, you know, liberal now on, is all about what norms are left that we can destroy. And I feel like we're living, I feel like Donald Trump is the ultimate embodiment of the 1960s value system, you know, put into play in this country.
Oh, I get to do it.
Yeah.
Okay, boomer. No, I'm kidding.
Well, I'm an Xer, dude.
I am too.
Yeah.
And so is Heidi. So none of us get to say that. But I think that you're talking about like a cultural generational thing. The post-war,
I don't think you can separate them. That's what I'm saying.
The post-World War II America And then it's children and grandchildren. Is this weird? We will write of this time, not we, we'll be dead. They will write of this time many things. And one of the things is the rapid change of technology, of the rapid change of, you know, empowerment of people who had no power, the destruction of institutions that once held sway. And all of these things can be blamed individually or all at once. I don't make the same connection, obviously, between 1960s liberalism and Donald Trump. I do see in Donald Trump human nature, the base nature of all people, and an almost comical, melodramatic parody of these human nature things. And he's figured out how to make exactly enough people and one whole political party react in a certain way, just enough to maintain an almost unshakable sense of power in the time that he's got. And he's not, I mean, he's probably freaking out about impeachment, but I don't think there's any reason to believe, as many have said, that we are looking at a time where impeachment, even if it's well prosecuted, even if they find worse and worse things, which they probably will, that it's going to lead anywhere that's going to change this country for the better. This is the problem we're in. And whether it started with Clinton or whether you want to blame Democrats or Republicans, I guess one of the things, and we don't have much time, but one of the things I was left with coming in here today was, how do we, meaning all of us, people listening who disagree, the people at this table and the people beyond, how do we go back, or maybe go back is the wrong word, how do we live up to the notion of a nonpartisan constitutional system of government? How do we go to a time, and how much of that is legal, political, how much of that is cultural? You know, because the Constitution was written by within a certain cultural construct that is no longer the case. How do we do that? You know, and so like the smashing of one norm, like
the Constitution's a living, breathing document that should be reinterpreted for its time.
Well, no,
which is
no,
like a core liberal doctrine. I'm with you in the sense that I'm like an originalist. I would like to see us follow the Constitution as it's written, with the intent of the Federalist Papers.
But
you know,
when we talk about smashing a political norm, it's one. You know, one norm is that, you know, people of a certain gender are subject to different rights systems than people of the other gender. And that's a norm that we can, I think, agree was good that they smashed that. But that was widely held at the time the Constitution was written. And there were things in the Constitution that were, as we've talked before, surrounding slavery, surrounding the way people are treated. And so certain norms, smashing them is a political decision that changes with the culture and is a living, breathing thing that changes. On the other hand, can we agree to, and I don't even mean the Constitution exactly as it was written, though obviously some people would see it that way, how can we get to a system by which the leading Democrat, popular Democrat, and the leading popular Republican, the people who their people voted for and like, can sit down and write a budget that lasts longer than 8 weeks, you know, knowing that those two people don't agree about what that budget should be or how it should be prosecuted or handled. We're in, and I'm more worried about the norms than I am about the Constitution, because the norms right now have become this scorched earth that is, I mean, it's just so discouraging. It's discouraging to watch. It's I can't watch the news as much. I used to, you and me were in college watching the news. You were printing out stuff. I was printing out stuff. I was, you know, into this. I went into journalism because I love the idea that a well-informed population makes good decisions. And now we're in this period where, you know, we're informing ourselves what we already want to know, or not at all, or we're looking for sources to tell us, you know, what we already believe or what feels comfortable to us. Our data is exploited in such ways that not only, I know that because I'm researching new flooring for our house and I'm getting all these ads and special targeted promotions related to flooring, that if they can do that for flooring, I know they're doing it politically. I know that I'm seeing things in my, you know, I'm seeing things to help conform me with a political reality when I go on social media. Not everybody knows that. And even experts, people who study it, like people with master's degrees in communication like me, are still exploited and shaped by our, by what we're seeing. How do we talk to each other, like we often do on this show? How do we get to that point where we can function? And that's my question walking in the door. And I don't know that there's a good answer, but that's what I'm really concerned about.
Heidi?
I'm wondering also on that, how do we get the next generation of civil servants or people serving in nonpartisan positions when we're kind of watching this play out during this impeachment?
But what is, okay, I don't want to sound like the broken record here, but I'm going to go back to a theme that I talk about all the time. We have created this system where now everything is decided at the federal level. Whether you're going to have a sidewalk funded in front of your school is now a matter of the U.S. Congress. Obscene. That there is no way. And so Aaron asked the question, like, why can't the leading Democrat and the leading Republican sit down and write a budget that lasts more than 8 weeks? And I'll tell you why. Because there's too much at stake in that budget. There's too many people that are tied into it. They have too many things that need to be met. They have too many constituencies that have to fall in line in order for us to take one single tiny little step. So you look at the civil servants today and you're like, how can they be treated with respect? And I hear that a lot from people on the left. It's like, oh, we don't respect our teachers. We don't respect our DNR officers. We don't respect our, you know, what have you. And like, I feel that, like, I want deep respect just for humans in general. Like, I think in society, our level of respect has dropped. And the old curmudgeon in me is like, why can't we just be nice to each other? You know, like, we kids used to be so much more respectful. But I also acknowledge that what we have done to a large extent is we have stripped power, decision, agency, capacity from people who used to be able to make reasonable decisions for themselves. We've centralized all those decisions in a handful of people who seem very distant, very non-responsive to us, very remote from our experiences. Like, they don't understand me or us or the things we go through. And we've given them all this power and authority. And not only that, but we've made them, in a sense, untouchable. We're having this debate now, which I think is very dysfunctional, over, you know, how many billions can we take from Bill Gates and give to the masses? It's an asinine conversation, because you could take all of Bill Gates' money and it would fund the federal government for 8 days. I mean, we're not talking about, like, redistributing wealth in a way that means anything to people. Where the power is in the if we want to call it the civil servants, the professional class, this group of people that runs society today, that is unelectable, unaccounted, and has dramatic impact over your lives and is just very disconnected from it. These are good people. And I'm not saying that they deserve derision or disrespect. They're trying to hold this crazy system together. But I look at, you know, the Donald Trump phenomena, and while I find him personally grotesque, and I don't think he should be president, I don't think he's presidential. Anyone who does 90 tweets a day in his random, you know, way as he does, an incoherent way as he does, should not be in the Oval Office, should not represent any of us as a country. Like, I'm with you. You want to impeach him and hold him to that standard? I'm fine with that. Like, remove him from office. But understand, I think, A, where he comes from, or what brought us to this point, and B, the fact that the people you get next may be more polished around the edges. They may not call up the Ukrainian prime minister and say, hey, investigate my rivals. or you won't get your aid. They may understand that the way you actually do that is to, you know, him and haw and just hold back the aid, and then they call and try to find out, and a low level bureaucrat will say, well, he's really interested in this. And like, oh, well, we'll see if we can make that happen. And, you know, we'll point your son to a board of a major company, and then, you know, things will start moving again. Understand that, like, that's what we would go back to, which is also absolutely not acceptable. And so, I share like the frustration of the Trump voter that this system is rigged. It's bad. It's wrong. It's centralized. It shouldn't be this way. Impeachment won't fix that. And in fact, I think has a chance of making it even worse.
I don't know that impeachment will make it better or worse. I only see it getting worse anyway, no matter what. And that's because we've lost this ability to talk to one another. I don't, now you might expect, I don't agree with everything you just said. But I do agree on a couple of key things we've talked about before. I buy into the notion and have written about, I call it the consultant class. Unelected people who have tremendous power, they have power not only in our federal government where they congregate in great numbers, but that our state government, they exist at our county level and they exist at our local level to the degree we allow that to happen. We can see them, we know their names when they're local, which is a certain kind of check. Right. You know, we know who they are. But this, and to a degree that's existed, it's perhaps only become stronger as systems become more complex. It becomes harder for citizens to educate themselves about all of it. Even people like you and me who claim to be smarty pants and who talk smarty pants things into microphones don't know all of it. You know, it's impossible for a single human to know all of it, which means you have to start relying on experts, which means you're now dealing with the bias of experts, the bias and then the interests of experts, which might be something that you connect with or might not. But so I buy into that notion that is a force, and that is part of the frustration that people have with bureaucrats, generally speaking. And I get that. But I also feel like if everything we do can be sorted into your partisan leaning, and that we should go to the spoils system or the pre-1914 system of patronage in government, where, you know, there's nobody who knows anything, only people who serve the leader, the party, the machine. I don't buy that either. Maybe I'm too idealistic, too liberal. That's why I tend towards centralization while you tend towards decentralization, perhaps just our inclinations. But I feel like we have a problem here when people can't just know things, share their information, and then people make an educated decision about it. People don't know enough. It's impossible to know enough about everybody's biases. We don't know where this information, when we Google it, comes from quite often. You know, we don't know who's making money off it. And I do think that income and power and money is involved. It's not the only factor, but it is. It is a factor. And,
I hear you, and I understand what you're saying. I feel like it's too convenient to take two snapshots of time and say, mm-hmm. pre-1914 was patronage, and like now we're not. I mean, explain Hunter Biden. Like, yeah, we are. You know, well, pre-1960s.
That for sure. Yeah,
well, no, but pre-1960s was like women were oppressed and today they're liberated. Mm-hmm. Well, let's go to Holiday and talk to the woman behind the counter and see how liberated she feels.
Right. You know? No.
This is what we have done is we have cast off norms, mm-hmm. and we've cast off expectations of each other. We've replaced them with a different set. We're running like a very different experiment. And I get it. The liberal progressive nature of American society today is that if this doesn't work, flip over the chessboard, we'll try something new. I find that to be chaotic, unhelpful. And I also think it doesn't help us actually make progress and resolve things. I'm for what I think we would all, if we sat down and talked about it, I'm for women's liberation. I'm for advancement of humanity. I'm for equality of treatment. And I think a just system becomes a more equal system over time. I don't think that's what we've had. And I think we've evolved into a system that is even less so than the people who set out to put us on this track.
I'm glad to hear you say that. I know it's true, but I also know that if you were to go up in certain crowds in this country and say what you just said, you'd get booed. And that's the problem we've got right now.
No, I would get booed.
Yeah.
Sure.
No, you know, and that's,
but I think, I often think that people think I would get booed because people hate, like, you know, economic power for Black Americans, and they want women in their kitchen. Yeah. There's an aspect of that. There's also an aspect of people who would burn down churches and, you know, think religion is horrible. I think that those are not mainstream voices. I think a lot of what you hear getting booed is the fact that a lot of this has been involuntarily shoved down people's throats in a way that has not resulted in prosperity. And I feel like the Trump phenomena is a lot of just destructively tapping into that. You know, there's this pit of angst.
This is where we agree, I think, is where we always have to end on an agreement, is
pit of angst.
Pit of angst. No, yeah. Yeah, that's exactly where both of us are. Yeah. No, but I think that there is something there that is important to acknowledge. And I think that it is a representation of something going on in our society that we need to address. I think we have a problem of not agreeing on our goals or how to accomplish our goals. Maybe even if we agree on goals, we have such profound disagreements about how to get there that's a real issue. So I don't know if we need to break it down. We need just a retreat, a national retreat.
Maybe we should just have a national therapy session.
Yeah. Maybe we need to stay offline for 3 days and see what happens.
I'm in.
Well, I'll climb ropes or something. How's that? Dig deep.